Welcome to the Phoenix Cast, a podcast about cybersecurity, technology, and innovation issues in the military. We are your hosts, John.
And Kyle.
I'm a U.S. Marine, and the opinions expressed on the cast are my own, not official military policy.
And the opinions expressed by me are also my own, not those of my employer or any other businesses I happen to be associated with.
For today's episode, we're joined by a pair of special guests, Rick Bobst, MCTISA's Warfighter Support Division, and TJ Johnson, MCTISA Senior Principal Engineer. Gents, thanks for joining us. Could you give us a quick intro?
Yeah, thanks, John. Thanks, Kyle. Thanks for having me here. Rick, representing Warfighter Support Division. Overall, professional existence revolves around our ability to make Marines more capable, more survivable, more lethal. So here to chat with you guys today and basically inform the community about the resources that MCTISA provides to the Joint Force.
Awesome.
Hey, everybody. Thomas Johnson. I go by TJ. I'm a senior principal engineer over at MCTISA. I have three focus areas that I work on. One is C2, command and control systems. The other one is mission partner environments. And the third one is AI and ML. So those are three areas that I'm working on. Super excited about all of those. And really just excited to be here. This is kind of cool, man. I very often get to talk about this stuff. So, it's pretty cool.
So this is a podcast I specifically selected because this is now episode number 80, and we haven't talked about MCTISA, and I felt like that was a disservice. So
yeah.
I called up the CEO and said, hey, I need to talk about MCTISA. Who do you want to come on and talk about it? And we got both of your names. So one, thanks so much for coming on. But this is something that both Kyle and I have a little bit of experience with.
Yeah, I'm going to go way back in the day, but MCTISA was a huge support to me when I was in and I was a chief warrant officer and we were, hooking up tactical networks in Afghanistan and in Iraq prior to that. I got to work with a really incredible MCTISA architect and we set up the very first UAV multicast video feed that went across multi-combat zone. So it wasn't just one base, private traffic. We went multicast across backbones, across the Cisco network, so that we had hundreds of miles away, a drone video feed coming across the local Cisco network, basically into a COC that was hundreds of miles away. So the ground commander could watch in real time with like a second of delay. So that was probably the coolest use of technology for warheads on foreheads that I ever got to play with. And it was all because MCTISA was there to support us and build that out. We wrote this big reference architecture about it. So it was just like super awesome and a great way to give back to the fleet and say, here's how you could be more effective with the tech that you have.
Yeah. And from my previous life as a commo, if you got in the field or deployed and you were in trouble, you generally had two options. You could call MCNOSC deployed support, now called MCOG, or you could call MCTISA's Warfighter Support Division. So, they are, like phone a friend nerds. These are the guys that you're going to call. And I've used them professionally several times and I have never been disappointed with the awesome experience that I got. So again, thanks so much for coming on. And for those who may not be super familiar.
Yeah, we've used the acronym like eight times, which is breaking the cardinal sin of this podcast. But Rick or TJ, you want to let us know what does MCTISA stand for? And what's the sort of general mission of MCTISA?
Hey, I'll grab that one. Hey, MCTISA, for those out there, is Marine Corps Tactical System Support Activity. We are subordinate command of Marine Corps Systems Command, which is the acquisition command of the Marine Corps. So they buy all the things that we get to the Marines to be able to do their jobs. The one thing that I think people should know about MCTISA was a lot of things, but the one thing is that MCTISA is the only developmental test organization for the Marine Corps. That's it. And because a lot of our equipment is in sustainment, a lot of times this is the last place that our Marines are that the equipment is going to be seen before the Marines get to it. So we have a really, we take that responsibility very seriously about, looking at testing, exercising this equipment, making sure that we're coordinating with all of our different elements within MCTISA, which I'll talk about in a second, to make sure that we're giving the equipment the best look through before it gets there and giving the Marines the best opportunity to operationalize that stuff when they get it. So when we talk about MCTISA's four, correct me if I'm wrong, Rick, I think we're four now. We're four divisions right now. So we have our amphibious vehicle test branch, which does a lot of stuff with ACV, ARV, any of the amphibious vehicles that we have to look at. They're pretty much on the ball. They're the point people for that. And they have a really, really critical job of keeping those, as we know, keeping those amphibious vehicles, reviewing them, testing them, putting them out there, doing high surf testing, things like that. We've got our test and engineering division. Test and engineering division is kind of the bulk. Well, I wouldn't say the bulk, but they're our interface to the program managers. Again, MCTISA lives in a sweet space between the operational force, the operational FMF, and the acquisition community. And though and the teams that work at in the TED division are responsible for creating that touch point there. And then we have our information structured services division. They have two roles, right? They look at, they're kind of our S6 for the command, but they're also looking at big data sets, infrastructure, looking at how to modernize our comm solutions. We talk about deploy MCSEN or the MCSEN, the future MCSEN, Marine Corps Enterprise Network, O365, some of these big data platform things. They're looking at, they're dual hatted in doing those things. And there's a lot of the big brains over there. And then finally, not least important, but I want to give pass this one over to Rick. We have a warfighter support division which provides that 24/7 support, and that's probably where I think the both of you have probably had your engagement with MCTISA. I'll hand it over to Rick on that one. Rick, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, TJ. Warfighter support division is just that. You know, the mission is to provide continuous, uninterrupted, direct support to the warfighter. We do it. We've done it for a long time. We're pretty mature. However, we continuously innovate the ways we provide solutions around the clock, you know, around the clock, around the globe. We got four branches internal to Warfighter Support Division. And so the one that everyone probably knows and is most familiar with is the Global Support Center. So it's a team of individuals, Marines, contractors, government civilians, that operate 24/7, 365. We have a global footprint of about 107 contractors worldwide that are funded by units, funded by, you know, POM, Congress, and then funded by stakeholders at Quantico Systems Command. And so we have them strategically located around the globe in order for us to rapidly provide solutions for contingencies, HADR missions, you name it, we're there to provide that support. Digital solutions, we're going to touch on a little bit. That's our DevSecOps team, mission-funded, very robust capabilities in agile software development. So we were definitely going to talk a little bit about them today. We have a great team of warfighter support officers that cover down on all major warfighting functions. So your C2, your air, ground, C2, communication, SATCOM, RF, intelligence systems, fire systems, data systems. And so those teams directly interface with the warfighter and the program office, serving as a direct liaison between the end users and acquisition professionals. What we've been doing over the last 5 years is we've kind of adopted the SOCOM acquisition model for buy, try, decide. Been very successful at that, doing combat evaluations and getting information to the appropriate stakeholders and supporting establishments on what the fleet wants and how they want it. So it's been great working with the warfighter support officers. And then last is the network design facility. So this very small team, but they have a gigantic impact on the joint force and the ability to fly planes and jets and rely on the Link 16 networks that they develop, design, and deliver 24/7 to the joint force partner nations. Quickly, that's WSD.
So if I have to summarize this for the layperson who's out there who may not be active duty anymore, MCTISA is Skunkworks, R&D, and the premium levels of support across all of the warfighting functions rolled into one command. So if you want to think about where James Bond would work if they worked inside of the Marine Corps, James Bond would work at MCTISA. And the fact that we have so much of, from WSD to the program management office to, you know, these specific cyber functions, that's also paired with amphibious assault vehicle research, basically, kind of speaks to the prioritization that we put on technology, on communications, on standardization, and on developing the next generation of those across the entire fleet.
Yeah, and there's one other thing I failed to mention. I want to make sure we get that. It kind of Rick kind of jogged my mind over the last 5 years. MCTISA has really transformed in a lot of ways, and I think one of the big ways is that with our partnership with Marine Corps Warfighting Lab, MCWIL. So a lot of the Force Design 2030 concepts, for those of us that for layperson, right, a lot of the experimentation, the concepts that build what will become the Marine Corps, what is the Marine Corps, what will become the future Marine Corps, they gestate or come out of McWill. And McWill has identified that, hey, MCTISA is a force enabler that will help them to realize some of their concepts. So for the last couple of years, we've been partnering with McWill. We've actually established a memorandum of agreement with McWill to help facilitate their experimentation. So for those of you that probably, if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably familiar with the Marine Corps, and you're probably read the Force Design 2030 update, right? And is there's a lot of directed actions that McWill has to accomplish. So some of those things are as they're planning those things out, they're asking us, hey, MCTISA, can you help us construct a venue to be able to execute some of these ideas? So that, I think that's critically important. It kind of puts where we, you know, and so I'm pretty excited about it.
Kyle, you brought up a good term, James Bond. And I just want to emphasize that, you know, James Bond at MCTISA wears uniforms as well. So we're an active duty unit, and we have some of the most capable Marines out there. Not only do they receive orders, do they come from MPS, we've been accepting Marines via TAD. So we have Marines actually come in bed with us for 6 months at a time, 6 month rotations to become critical operators and maintainers for the fleet. It's been very, very successful. So again, opening that up to the community, work with us to get you over to MCTISA for however long your commander allows. And we're definitely going to make you more capable in return, making your unit more capable.
And we have not talked about this much on the cast before, but NPS, Naval Postgraduate School, this is an opportunity that we provide to officers and more recently enlisted Marines, where they can go out to Monterey, California and get some additional schooling. One of the many benefits that we have in the Marine Corps. So, you know, want to give them a good plug, but after you get that awesome schooling, then you get the added bonus of one of the payback tours from going there is a tour at MCTISA. So I was wickedly jealous that I never got that opportunity, but definitely something that we wanted to talk about.
And I just saw via social media that the very first Naval Postgraduate School graduate who got their degree in machine learning and artificial intelligence just graduated and just so happens to be a lieutenant that I served with in Iraq and Afghanistan. So kind of an amazing kind of thing this is a small Marine Corps, everybody. It's a very, very, very tiny, tiny, tiny Marine Corps. You're going to run into these folks all the time. And Rick, to that point, Sergeant Bond or Captain Bond work at MCTISA, check. And TJ mentioned Force Design 2030. We've probably talked about that 15 times in this cast, but we will have a link in the show notes. If you are a listener and you still haven't read that thing, we highly encourage you to do so.
If you haven't read that thing, you probably failed, but that's okay.
Yeah, definitely. So follow on that I had here, TJ, on the cast, we talk a lot about the MCSEN, the Marine Corps Enterprise Network, and we talk a lot about NIPR and CIPR, our unclassified and classified networks, respectively. Has MCTISA put any thought into, or are they allowed to branch out beyond just the Marine Corps Enterprise Network, NIPR and CIPR?
So MCTISA's put a lot of thought on that. I'll give you a little bit of background. I was a contractor. I was with industry before I came into to MCTISA, and I was forward deployed in Iraq and Afghanistan from 2004 to 2009, bouncing back and forth. And in my work, almost everything I did was mission partner specific, right? It was with allies and partners, whether you're Iraq, whether you're working with the Brits or the Polish, or, you know, or you're working with, you know, within the joint area, obviously we're, you know, as you're crossing across, you know, Fallujah and, you know, through Fallujah and Baghdad, right? You're working with the army. That was always cross boundary stuff going on, working with SOCOM, things like that. So that's always been my career path. That's always been my career. And I came to MCTISA and we kind of worked some of the stuff. But currently, if you've heard of Joint All Domain Command and Control, JADC2, right? The name has recently changed to CJADC2, Combined Joint Command and Control, right? So it's about working with those mission partners. The beautiful thing about the United States of America is that it has allies, and that is one of the strongest capabilities that we have is besides our own warfighting capability. But we're not going to fight alone. We're not going to do it alone. We're going to work with allies and partners to influence malign actors anywhere we go. But that means that we have to be able to communicate with those partners, right? You can't be a partner if I can't communicate. So what we've been doing over the last couple of years is we've been working with Joint Staff J6 on an initiative called Mission Partner Environment, MPE. So today we work in what we call a network-centric environment, right? So that means that we separate our data via the network itself. So for those of you, when we talk about NIPR, the unclassified network, or CIPR, the classified network, those are physically separated devices, right? The two cables shall not touch, right? So that's how it works today. So if I want to have another enclave where I want to have a mission partner, right? Let's say the UK or the Japanese or whoever it is, I have to make what we call a third stack, right? So when we talk about the Indo-Pacific or Indo-PACOM, there are 95 mission releasable networks. So that means that if a Marine wants to operate in Indo-PACOM and communicate with the allies and partners as they move through, that's 95 systems they have to put together.
TJ.
You said it twice. I just want to make sure. 95, like 95, like the one that comes after 94? 94.
There are 95.
Okay.
Is that it?
Yes. So what about that is that, you know, if we're talking about, if we look at Commandant's Planning Guidance, we talk about expeditionary advanced bases, smaller, faster, lighter units. You're not going to be smaller, faster, and lighter with 95 enclaves. That doesn't work. So what we're looking at is a construct, you're talking about zero trust, and it's a whole other podcast. We talk about zero trust or data-centric security. But to say it at a layman's terms, or at least a techno-lame term, or techno-lame, which is me, I guess I'm a techno-lame. But in techno-layman's terms, we're talking about protecting the information at the data level and being able to share it at the data level, having the markings and classification at the data level so that I can tell by your releasability that data is releasable to you. But I need two things. I need identity. I need to know who you are. I need to know the system, and I need to know the data, right? Because when we think about classification, right, the server is not classified. It's the data, right? We're protecting the data. I'm not protecting the switch, I'm not protecting the server, I'm protecting the data, right? So how do we move that data? So we've been working some stuff again with joint staff. We've done two of these, a mission partner initiative one, which we validated that data centricity or zero trust is a viable approach. Now we've done MI2, we've done with our strategic capabilities, which was secret and below and releasable, also known as SABR. So if you heard of SABR, that is the material solution that is a material solution for our strategic data centric capability. So now in MI 3.0, we're moving to the operational and the tactical. So now we have the COCOMs that are now starting to bring their own zero trust capabilities into play. CENTCOM has the first one. And then the Marine Corps is actually participating at a tactical node, because the area that we have been focused on is cool. All this mix in and all this identity stuff is all well and good, but can I put that down to the squad level? What happens to how do I handle identity on that handheld device or whatever, right? Do I need to log in to get this thing, or what happens when I get disconnected from the network and I can't log anymore, right? We need to be able to, we need to exercise that. So that's what we're doing. So the Marine Corps is actually exercising as a tactical node. And we've been really, really fortunate that we've been able to communicate with 1MEF, 2MEF, 3MEF, MAR4-YEAR, MAR4-PAC. So they're all contributing resources to investigate this because it has operational relevance to what they're doing. I mean, you all saw what happened in Russia last week or this weekend, right? The situation in the world can change really, really fast. You know, you can ask Putin, you know, but it can change really, really fast. But, you know, the Marines are designed to respond to those crises, right? And they're going to have to pick up and operate with those partners that are near them so they can execute that mission. So this is why this is really critical. And I know I took a little bit on that one, but I think it's important to communicate to the team.
So TJ, I've got a follow-up for you there. So, as a technologist, that is not the super easiest concept to follow. And I would imagine most of the people that you're talking to don't have their own podcasts where they discuss this all the time. How do you break these concepts down several layers to make it to where it's leadership digestible? You know, imagine a COMO second lieutenant is listening to this and they're like, oh my God, I barely understand this. How am I going to explain this to my grunt aviator logistician boss?
Great, great question. You know, we're still struggling on how to put in those bite-sized chunks. But what I would give you is the analogy I give people is like you use zero trust every day. Anytime that you go to an ATM and you put your ATM card you use it on your phone. But you know, that you use the ATM card and you go to a bank that's not your bank, right? So you put that in there. You put your card in and then you put your pass key in. That's identity. right? And then that identity is then forwarded from that bank to whatever series of banks between that bank and your bank. And then what happens is that once it gets to your bank, what is it, what that ATM gets to see is only the data that's relevant to you on that account that you select, right? And the only thing they're able to present to you is the amount of money that you have in that account. And the only thing you have access to is the amount of money you take out. Once that transaction is done, that ATM no longer knows you exist. You no longer exist. There's no more trust there. You only have that trust for the time that you're authenticated to it. So I usually use the ATM example for people, and they're like, oh, okay, yeah, it's not scary, right? Because a lot of times this whole thing about mixing networks, it scares people, right? It scares the ISSM to death. But I'm like, you're not scared of using, you know, that ATM that's on the shady corner over there by the 7-Eleven, right? We do that all the time. Right. So if you're not scared with that, you know, this is the same technology. So that's how I try to communicate it to people. But we do, to your point, as we talk about these new technologies, we have to find a way to communicate it in a way that's understandable to our community.
We also understand that we're working with modern Marines that have grown up with tech, a phone in their pocket for years, and they've watched emerging technology and industry. But now I circle back to what we're doing. As an institution, as an enterprise, to make solutions more responsive, we're relying more on local infrastructure, the commercial products to get solutions faster. So you can only imagine, you know, when the next large conflict or the next conflict arises, all the work that's being put into mission partner environments, partner nation, collaboration, and federation, a lot of that goes out the window immediately, right? Unless we standardize things. And that's a lot of the work that's going into this is, what are we going to use and how? And if not, what's the dynamic failover? What do we go to? You know, and I think that's important that everyone understands that it's being worked and that it is an urgent priority at many general officer levels.
So somewhat of a follow-on question here. So we talked about you providing a bunch of support to the fleet and whatever Marines need your help, you're there to help them. Is that limited to just kind of some hands-on support or over-the-shoulder assistance? Or can you actually help in educating the force, kind of giving classes or bringing people up to speed technology-wise?
Absolutely. So giving classes, we classify the things we do on site as over-the-shoulder, because if there's going to be equipment there, whether it's a UI, whether it's hardware, software, we want the operators pushing the buttons, turning the knobs, doing the configurations, because that makes them proficient enough to call us if they do run into a problem. When you rapidly produce capability and you throw it in the hands of a Marine that may or may not have just hit the fleet, they may or may not, you know, have to go to the rifle range or just got off the rifle range. You know, differentiating between proficiency and continuity. And I think that WSD and MCTISA at large provides that bridge. And not only do we travel on site, we have the infrastructure to have Marines come to MCTISA and fall in on the battle lab, fall in on our LFOC, which is Landing Forces Operations Center. It smells and looks just like a ship's LFOC. You can't really replicate that unless you go on ship. Marines can come to MCTISA to get that. So we call it hosted support. So do we do, you know, curriculum development? No. Are we going to do classroom style training? No. But will we travel to you? Will we host you and make you more proficient and educate you in what tomorrow looks like? Absolutely. We'll also educate you on what we're finding out in experiments and test assessments. We're also going to educate you on what's happening in different parts of the world, how ThirdMEF is employing equipment or buying certain equipment, utilizing industry equipment. We're going to share that because what we do is we're great at data analysis, capturing use cases, and then we share it in a plethora of means on Nipper and Zipper. So we provide those capabilities on a regular basis, and then we host it. So you can definitely go to our website and see a lot of the things that we're probably going to talk about today.
And I can definitely vouch for their data analysis capability. I have had them come to the field and help me with some, hey, I suspect there is this issue here. And MCTISA has been able to come out previously and actually take scientific measurements and prove hypotheses where we just didn't have the both equipment and capability to be able to do so, and massively powerful that they're able to do that.
And one thing to add, you know, over the last 365 days, we have been at SOI teaching technical signature management. We've been at Fort Sill doing the same thing. We've been out at the infantry officers course, working with them on the integration of tactical assault kit. We have been working hand in hand with the expeditionary communications course, the leadership there, and providing and the curriculum to really advance the users of fielded equipment, right? Because that's what the fleet has right now. That's what you can rely on. It's there. How are we going to employ it the best way? How do we understand spectrum? How do we lower our footprint? And those are some of the things that we do provide the education piece on, because there isn't a lot of resident courses that you can take on omnidirectional versus directional antennas, right? The lowest amount of power needed to keep an encryption or a transmission encrypted, right? Those things you can learn in a schoolhouse, but you learn it out operating equipment in diverse environments.
So quick acronym check, SOI stands for School of Infantry. That is the course that our enlisted infantry Marines are going to go to. And the Expeditionary Communications course, we will be having a follow-on podcast specifically about that. So just to wet your whistle, get ready for that one. TJ, it looked like you had something you wanted to say.
So I want to touch on a couple of things that Rick, I want to expound on a couple of things that I think people don't realize, right, that I think is important for people to understand about MCTISA, is that continuity, right? It really is a repository of Marine Corps technical memory. I think that's something that is important for people to understand. There's years of information of, you know, has it been done before? Has it been tried before? This is what it looks like. A lot of people don't recognize that. And I think another thing, too, is, right, because MCTISA is in every client, really everywhere the Marines are, we get perspective, like you said before, right? We see how 3MEF is using a thing, and then we can go, like, those Marines that, you know, again, if you're a 3MEF Marine, you're kind of a 3MEF Marine. If you're a Hollywood Marine, you're kind of a Hollywood Marine. You know, if you're a Lejeune Marine, that's kind of, you live that life, right? So MCTISA gets an opportunity to bounce through all of those and say, hey, here's how we see somebody else using this that you may not, right? This is what they've been doing. And I think a lot of times you get best of breed when you're getting MCTISA to come up, you're getting that expertise that comes with the subject matter expertise of those MCTISA personnel, right, that come there. But you're also getting that combined knowledge of every experience that MCTISA has had with every unit that we typically see. And I think if my numbers are correct, in a given year, I think MCTISA touches over 85% of the FMF in a given year. So if you're in the FMF and you have gear that beeps, squeaks, tweaks, or whatever, MCTISA's probably touched your unit or touched your higher headquarters unit that's touched you in a different way. So I just wanted to highlight that too.
Let's go a little bit deeper on that support. So most of us have experience with MCTISA helping us in the field or on deployed networks, but does MCTISA actually have a role in installation, configuring, operating, maintaining, defending the enterprise network as well? Or is this just a tactical kind of thing?
I'd like to say that MCTISA touches it all. So when you look at the deployed MCSIN, if you look at Garrison networks, the enterprise networks, we have a senior principal engineer, and that's his focus. Is how do we secure that? How do we take tactical systems, garrison systems? How can they integrate? What's the interoperability look like? But we're getting to a point where you're going to see more quote unquote tactical systems on garrison networks. For a great example, is WinTAC. So right now you can go to the software center on your MCSIN, Nipper or Sipper, to the software center and install WinTAC. You can connect to a TAC server. Every MEF has a TAC server on MCSIN, N, and S. And guess what? They're all federated. So that it's a huge capability. So I really don't want to limit, you know, MCTISA to just tactical systems. And we're not even limiting ourselves to tactical C5I systems. We're supporting fires. You know, we're supporting artillery weapons, HIMARS. We're supporting infantry weapons and optics. In a multitude of ways, and then, you know, TJ, if you'd like to hit on, you know, what Greg provides
Yeah, I'll jump in on that. So yeah, I think it's fair to give a plug to the other senior principal engineers. So I'm one of many, but we have a couple different domains. We have one senior principal engineer like Rick had kind of talked about. His focus is on enterprise networks and understanding the enterprise, that strategic level. We have another senior principal. It's a advanced technology. So it's new technology, 5G. There's those types, 5G technology. I use that one. That's kind of the one he's talking about right now. But those advanced technologies, how do you bring that into the Marine Corps? How do you integrate it in there? We have another one that's on amphibious networks or amphibious systems, right? He's focused on amphibiosity. And then we have another one that's on air C2 at the strategic level. So all five of us were kind of this. We have one more, and she's on software, right? Software development. So all of the strategic level. So we're all over the place. But yeah, working with the enterprise, right? Moving from tactical to enterprise, we work with C4 very often, and a lot of times we're one of their augmentees to help kind of answer some questions on some things. And in fact, I think Lieutenant General Glavy is coming out next week to come talk to us about a couple of ideas that he has. So again, but this is really talking about that morphing that MCTISA has done to the point like where we were kind of really probably when you guys were, you know, Kyle, when you were in, like, we were really focused on the grunt and making sure it worked because that's where the problems were, right? But now, if we look about it, we talk about all domain, right? The problems aren't at the pointy end of the spear; it's at the pointy end of the cyber spear, right? So that's going to ask us to really change how we think about stuff and think about protecting the network, defending the network. And how do you make that technology work there? So we're seeing that. And that also speaks to our cyber team. We're a designated blue team out of MCTISA to do, defensive cyber testing. So that's part. I mean, again, our role has really expanded into things that we have done, and we do it with a tight staff, right? 300 folks, right? It's 150 Marines, 150 civilians thereabouts. And, that we make it happen. So, it's exciting times.
And that's mission funded support. So when we travel on site, we don't charge anyone, right? So we just travel to you. We make you more capable. You come over to us. We're probably going to feed you, give you some water, all those things to make sure that at the end of the day, your experience with MCTISA was successful.
Yeah, I think that mission funded part is really, really critical for people to understand, right? I think that's another key enabler of MCTISA, right? It's like we're tasked by the mission and not by the funding. I mean, funding is always a thing, right? Let's not pretend it's not a thing. But our mission is to execute to that, execute to the mission, and the funding comes with that. We've seen over time, right? I think Rick's got a great example with TAC. About, hey, we did the mission. We realized there was a gap there. We put the resources to it. We took it out of hide. And as such, right, it's kind of the field of dreams. You build and they will come. And, as they work with the tax solution, right, we kind of went into deficit to support that. But I think now we're getting, Rick, I'll let you, I don't know what the funding number is. It's 750 or something like that. But there's some, we're starting to get funded to actually facilitate that TAC development. And I'll hand over to Rick on that one.
Yeah, absolutely. Tactical Assault Kit obviously is more than a buzzword. What we've done at MCTISA for 18 months, and it may be getting closer to 24 months, is a campaign to alert the enterprise of a government off-the-shelf software that works, right? Not only does it work on a multitude of platforms, but the continuous delivery of software, the modernized delivery of software that the TAC Product Center has incorporated is amazing. So a big shout out to them and how they're able to, one, develop core products for a very diverse customer base. There's 13 members of the Configuration Steering Board. MCTISA just joined last August. First time Marine representation has been on that steering board. The other 12 members are made up of DoD assets and capabilities throughout SOCOM, Army, Navy, Air Force, but also over in the State Department, the FBI, Customs Border Patrol, DHS, DOJ, you name it. The federal government utilizes TAC in a multitude of ways, over 350,000 users. So I think we'll probably hit on that a little bit. And Kyle, if you want to deep dive into the ruggedized capabilities that is filled in. And yeah,
absolutely. And so Rick and TJ and John and I were talking a little bit before the cast about this stuff, and I brought up my favorite piece of equipment that I ever got to use in the entire Marine Corps. It was the CF-19 Panasonic Toughbook. There was nothing sexier on the planet than when you got to that Toughbook got opened and you could run it over with a Humvee and it'd still work. And like the touchpad, you had to put your elbow into it. Like you had to press it so hard to get that mouse to move. It was just, and hope everyone's catching the sarcasm here. This thing was hot flaming garbage. It was amazing. And you can buy one right now on eBay. We checked for about $50 to $150, depending on how much capability you want to have. But I'm actually interested, Rick and DJ, a little bit more in what is the end user? What's the, and TJ, you said this a few minutes ago, back when I was in, the end user, it was really solving the grunt level problem. How does the Victor unit, how does the infantry unit actually use technology and get what they need? But now I think we've divested from that a little bit. And while I still want to understand how that works, what is the last mile device these days? What is that interface looking like? Is it still a modern version of a Toughbook? Is there a Toughpad from Apple or something like that? What does that look like?
Yeah, so there's obviously quite a bit of capability out there in the form, small form factors for tablets, phones, et cetera. I want to say that Toughbooks are still being developed. I think they're a little more capable.
Say it ain't so, Rick.
They may have upgraded from Windows XP as well. So, there's a need for ruggedized capabilities. And I think that across the enterprise, you're going to get different answers on those capabilities and whether or not a ruggedized laptop it is purposeful, right? But as far as handhelds go, obviously the lightweight capability, transport agnostic capabilities is huge right now. You can't have a locked down single threaded device, right? Because if you do that, guess what you have? Now you have six devices that all do a mission. So I want to say that we're getting better at consolidating efforts and getting things down to a small form factor, but also utilizing mobile device managers to manage the device and put capabilities and put mission sets to meet objectives on a multitude of handhelds and a multitude of handhelds that are currently fielded.
I looked down at my desk as you said this just now, Rick, and I literally counted six separate devices that I have on my desk at the moment for interacting with different things. And so, number one, I feel attacked. Number two, that is awesome though, because I love the concept of I don't want the single threaded device, right? I kind of want the one multi-capable tool that gets everything you need. And I always come back to the cell phone example, right? I don't need a separate calculator and a phone and a computer and a laptop and a tablet and a video conferencing suite. I just have one device that's got a camera and a network connection and I can get my job done. Go ahead, TJ.
Yeah. So on part of that as well, we talk about single threaded, right? The way that the Marine Corps has kind of operated its programs of record in the past is we've done it by warfighting function, right? So I need a program of record for fires, and that's the only thing it can do. This is my TO weapon, right? I need a program of record for COP. I need a program of record for Intel. I need a program of record for logistics. Right? So on and so forth. So now, right, when we talk about handhelds, right, which number one, I'll say this out loud, handhelds are in my, so again, I'm speaking for myself. This is not indicative of my command or the United States Marine Corps, or the United States government, but I think handhelds are the future of where we need to be. It's really again.
Say it again, TJ. Say it again. We want to preach it on here. That's right. Say it again.
You know, if I get assigned to tactical brooms next week, you guys know what I did, and I salute you all. I preach it myself.
it was fun, TJ. It's been fun.
But the thing about it is that right today, common sense wise, I can operate my entire life off of my cell phone. The thing that we're all scared of is losing your phone anywhere because everything is on it. Right? I can do the same thing with the warfighting. Any Marine that's born after 2000, which is most, can use a cell phone to operate there. Yeah, you should feel attacked on that one. The average fun fact,
it's just keep coming.
The fun fact here: the average Marine is 23 years old. The average government civilian is 48. So that's a fun fact for you there. So you can take that one. You can go to look it up. It might be 49 and a half now. I think we've aged up. So but. we can run, if I can run my entire life on a cell phone or a handheld device, I can run all seven warfighting functions on a handheld device. And if we want to be competitive in these expeditionary advanced bases, small units moving around, shooting, moving, communicating, right? I'm not going to tug a CF-19 is probably good because I can lug it around, right? But with that cell phone, right, or that mobile device, let's call it a mobile device, not only can I move around, I can use host nation power without special plugs or anything else. I can just go take it. I can find a cell phone cable anywhere in the land. If there's power, I can charge it up, right? So I don't have to bring all that. And that's all swap, right? It's all about reducing space, weight, and power. Sorry, I did an acronym without explaining it, right? But we live and die on the Marine Corps by increasing swap, and we live by reducing it, right? That's just kind of how it is.
And as we're exploring, you know, phones and tablets, handheld devices, you know, the real requirement is getting to wearables, right? What can I have on my watch that's going to alert me when I've hit a checkpoint? Augmented reality, mixed reality, artificial intelligence, machine learning. I mean, it's all going to happen, and it's happening fast. I mean, a lot of people think, you know, we're playing catch up, but the experimental establishments in the Marine Corps, they're doing some outstanding things. And obviously we can't hit on a lot of those today, but, you know, don't be surprised, you know, here in the near future when you have some guys on your podcast and they're wearing Microsoft HoloLens and, you know, they're coordinating fires while also communicating with you. Right. So it's a capability. It just, you know, the right people have to be in the room and all agree on that. This is the direction, this is the need. And then you know, task appropriately to get that requirement, get that capability, filled it out to the end users.
I think Rick just gave us a brand new mission/goal/OKR, which is try to have a guest on who is coordinating fires in real time with a wearable.
Let's do it.
The level of awesome that we're going to strive for over the next decade of this podcast.
For sure.
And while he's talking about some of the AI stuff, I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the AI work that I'm working on right now, because I think it's pretty impressive. So I'm working with Naval Postgraduate School. We actually at MCTIS, we were awarded $100,000 to mature a AI or machine learning concept, or natural language processing concept. So what we've done is we've taken 10,000 requirements, individual requirements from about 8 or 9 programs of record, and we've put them into, we've got an algorithm that is now looking at those requirements and saying, hey, which requirements are most like the other requirements, right? Because every program of record will say, hey, any program will tell you, this program of record is the commander's solution to doing X, right? And it's the only one that can do X, right? So what we've done is we've actually put those 10,000 requirements into this algorithm and said, okay, tell me all the requirements that are like this. So I can look at 4 or 5 programs of record and say, hey, you all have the requirement to generate a position report. You are not special, right? That is, so now we can start, when we talk about creating a next level Marine Air Ground Task Force C2 command and control system, we can look at the things that are common in our systems now and say, hey, here are the common things. The other thing we can do, we can look at things that are divergent, right? Which requirements are so divergent from the other requirements that we really probably need to look at that. We can visualize that in 2D and 3D. The other thing that this algorithm can do with 92% accuracy, it can look at just the text of that requirement and tell you if it's an objective or threshold requirement, which I thought was pretty amazing. So for those of you that aren't savvy in acquisition speak, threshold is what a program must do. It must do that to be a usable capability by the Marines. Objective capabilities are things that are nice to do, or we would like to do, but we don't have the funding, the technology, or what have you. But if I can look through those 10,000 requirements and say, hey, here's the 445 that are threshold requirements, and then I can seed it by saying, here's your mission, right? You have a mission and you have these systems. Now, with your mission, I can now say, hey, with your mission, you have to take this checkpoint, right? You have to get to this checkpoint, right? That's your mission, right? Which systems will enable you to get to that mission? I can actually see that through and then get those threshold requirements out. So we're able to do that from taking just taking the PDF, the signed documents, and then process it all the way through. So it's pretty exciting. What we plan on doing is training the model on policy documents. such as the Commandant's Planning Guidance, to say, okay, here's the Commandant's Planning Guidance. The plan, the guidance has changed. Program of record, do you still match, does your capability still match the Commandant's Guidance, right? So we say, hey, we're going from a CT fight, a counterterrorism fight, right, to a maritime fight. Well, all those programs of record over the last 20 years, they've been optimized to operate in a CT environment. Are they optimized to operate in a maritime domain environment? Well, today, without that machine learning in place, it's going to take 4, 5 to 10, 15 personnel to peruse each one of those documents and then think about pulling that stuff out, right? That's unsustainable at scale. So that's exciting stuff. And I'd love to talk about that a little bit later at a different time, but it's, I'm pretty excited about it.
Yeah. And Rick, do you have anything that's kind of similar from your digital solutions team that you're excited about?
Yeah, we're very excited about the capability to rapidly deploy applications and software that's homegrown, that's government owned, that meets a demand that didn't exist yesterday, but it existed tonight, and so we got you a solution tomorrow. So there's quite a few things happening at MCTISA in regards to our digital solutions capability. So what's happened is you know, Colonel Clarkson has thrown a lot of weight, a lot of manpower at MCTISA in-house developing applications, modernizing programs of record, right? So if we have the capability to push a fielded system to a handheld, right? If we can wrap up that software, write a TAC plugin, get it integrated with the TAC ecosystem, we're going to do that. And it's not because it's something we want to do. All of our initiatives are based on the end user asking for something, and it could be in passing, or it could be a unknown amount of tickets that we've received from the end user saying, I need this thing, or the thing that I do have, I need it to do something else. I like it, but can we add a feature to it? And so we want to do that stuff in-house. Not only that, we want to bring software development back to MCTISA like it used to be, developing programs of record, advancing programs of record, and in future, get to a point where we're a transition partner for DARPA, right? So if DARPA develops a very cool capability and the Marine Corps is that field user evaluator, well, why not we just keep that software in-house? We'll continue to modernize it and eventually transition it to a program of record, right? So we do that all in-house. So some of the things that we've been doing and exploring is utilizing commercial equipment to benefit the end user around the globe. So one of the joint initiatives that we've done with the Marine Corps Software Factory is the development of SPARTA, which I know you've had Lieutenant Colonel Bach on here, Charlie Bach. We have a great relationship with them, and we're going to continue to grow that relationship because we are believers in the capabilities of uniform coders. They exist. You know, recently we did a TAC development course out of our 41 area. And so EOTG had said, hey, I got this Marine. He's a Lance Corporal and he codes. And I was like, cool, let him come. Within 30 minutes of that guy being on site in this class, our digital solutions branch head, Edgar Valla, said, how do we get this guy T80 to us? He is that good. And then they're there, they're existing. And not all of them are in an 06 capacity. You have artillerymen that are very, very capable coders that go back home after blowing stuff up and they develop an app just because that's what they like to do. So we're interfacing a lot with the software factory. We're also looking at capabilities in the fleet of people that have developed apps and whether or not, you know, they're transitioning out of the Marine Corps. Like, work with us so your effort doesn't go unnoticed and it doesn't go unchanged and it never materializes. So we also want to work that, but a lot of the things that we are heavily involved with is Force Design 2030 and getting initiatives developed now in-house to meet a current demand signal, utilizing fielded hardware. And you probably heard me say that a few times. You know, there isn't a lot of time that we have to develop huge, gigantic programs. What we have filled in regards to hardware is a capability. If we can homegrown software that doesn't cost money, you don't have to go to Palm, you don't have to wait 2 years to get some money to create an app, right? We just do it. we do it, and we do it in conjunction with the software factory. We do it in conjunction with the Marine Innovation Unit to rapidly produce these solutions. It's something that we take a lot of pride in. I would say that here in the near future, you're going to see a lot of labels that are out that say, you know, you're going to see a big DS on there, and that's digital solutions. And that's coming out of MCTISA. And as we continuously, you know, provide these services, what we want is requirement owners. We want uniform requirement owners that come to us with a problem. And so I'll quickly speak about one of those problems. That's a logistics common operational picture, right? So we have stakeholders at 2nd MLG, 1st MLG, and McLog that came to us and said, this is what we need as an enterprise for logistics. This is what we need. And not only did they come to us with a problem set, they came to us with a very good model of what they need. The captain had developed this in an Adobe software base. And so it really gave us the capability to rapidly develop an MVP, which we're currently in discovery for. So that capability is going to continuously grow.
And gents, we are getting pretty close on time. So TJ, I'll kick it over to you. Any last thoughts before we go to outro?
Yeah. So first off, just so happy to have an opportunity to meet with you guys and sync up and be able to communicate about, you know, the work that we do at MCTISA. It's really a fine organization. And I really appreciate the fact that I get to, you know, get to talk about what we do and with Rick here and with you guys. So that's number one. Number two, if I were to leave the listener with anything, right, I'd want to leave them with the knowledge that the Marine Corps is charging ahead in a lot of activities that's related to Force Design 2030. And really what that means is that the Marine Corps is preparing itself every day, steeling itself to defend the United States of America against malign actors anywhere, any place, anytime. Right. That doesn't go away. And it takes the work of these fine civilians, these fine contracts we have, the fine uniform personnel that we have, that entire team, not just at MCTISA, but across the supporting establishment to really get those capabilities out to those Marines. And I want people to recognize that you've got hardworking Americans here trying to make this place better for our warfighters every single day. So I think I'd leave with that. And I appreciate you guys again so much. Let me be on it for a little bit.
TJ, awesome. Rick, any final thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I appreciate the opportunity to be here and speak about MCTISA. What we want to do, and it's a continuous marketing campaign, is we want the end users to understand they have resources available for all things, I'm going to say tactical, but for all things with an operating system. You know, we're here to help for that. We're here to take your ideas. We're here to learn from the end users. We want to know what it is that you're passionate about, and want to help you get a solution and a capability filled it to you. As far as the MCTISA's place in the supporting establishments, I think that where we are and our relationships and our relationships with the Deputy Commandant for Information, the Marine Corps Warfighting Lab, Marine Corps Systems Command, it really allows us to play ball and communicate with the appropriate people at the appropriate levels to make decisions and field capabilities. And that's the end goal. That's what we want to do, is we want to make Marines more capable, more lethal, and more survivable.
Excellent. Kyle, it is that time. Give us your hot take.
Okay. James Bond wears a uniform is my hot take from this episode. No, just kidding. I want to highlight to everybody that's out there that if you don't have a clear understanding of what MCTISA is and how they support you as a warfighting effort, do everything you can to get closer to MCTISA. It's a incredible organization that adds immense value to the Fleet Marine Forces and makes sure that we have what we need to fight effectively in the modern battle space, whether that's cyber, whether that's physical, it doesn't matter. In the air, on land, and sea, as it were. So I also want to call that anybody that wants to be at the tip of the spear, you should actively seek to try and get a role at MCTISA. You should actively seek to try and go somewhere where you can have an extreme and positive influence on the fleet. It is here. So it took us 80 episodes to get here, which there's no excuse for, but now that we are, we're gonna press it home real hard. Go help MCTISA, help the Marines.
Dear listeners, thanks for joining us. You can connect with us on social media by going to Twitter and following at @USMC_TFPHOENIX. That's at @USMC_TaskForcePhoenix. Our editor is Sarah Clarkson, and marketing support is provided by Jake Osborne. You can support the cast by going to Apple Podcasts and leaving us a 5-star review and a lovely MCTISA-related comment. And with that, we are out.